It's time for your week daily look at the NBA and your Charlotte Hornets. It's time for the Hive O'Clock Alarm.
How you doing? Oh, that sounds amazing.
Well, that was less than ideal. Welcome to the Hive O'Clock Alarm. I'm Doug Branson, joined by David Walker. It's Hornets talk for the hardcore fan. Game one of the 2016 NBA playoffs for the Charlotte Hornets is in the books, and the Hornets get the flamethrower taken to them in Miami, 123-91, the final. Miami wins the game. David, let's just get right into it. What went wrong for the Charlotte Hornets in game one as they got blitzed?
Yeah, where do you start, Doug? I mean, not much went right. I would say that the first thing that came to my mind is they didn't look ready. No one out there in the start of the game looked ready to go except for Nick Batum in my eyes, which, you know, it's not surprising. He's had more playoff experience probably than most people on the Hornets roster. So that was the first thing that stuck out to me. I mean, we could go back and forth here, but what did you think of the overall readiness?
Yeah, I think you're dead on there. I think there was a missing element of physicality and intensity that would not have shown itself so prominently had it not been for the fact that so many guys on Miami's roster were ready to go. Lual Ding, obviously, 31 points. Hassan Whiteside was very physical inside. Dwayne Wade, Justice Winslow, Goran Dragic, all relentlessly driving. And the one guy, and he shot efficiently from the field, but he got into some foul trouble. But the one guy we pinpointed as a possible problem, Joe Johnson, was maybe the least of the Hornets' worries, strangely enough. But yeah, I mean, Miami had a great game plan, David. They went super small. It gave Frank Kaminsky a lot of problems. Lynn had to guard Wade. Kaminsky had to guard Justice Winslow. I saw a lot of Twitter comments like, why is Frank guarding Justice Winslow? He had to, because that's how small the Miami Heat went. I mean, they went Dragic, Richardson, Winslow, Ding, and then Stoudemire. So, I mean, you had that going on. You had guys like Stoudemire, and Dwayne Wade, Lual Ding, getting in time machines, playing better than they've played in a long time, just really getting up for the playoffs, and it hurt the Hornets.
They killed them. I mean, you mentioned Joe Johnson. They didn't even need him. I mean, Ding with 31 points, 11 for 13 from the field, 4 for 6 from 3. I mean, I don't know if you ever saw that in prime Lual Ding era. You know what I mean? It was just unreal. They couldn't miss. And the bottom line is you can't give up 41 points in the first quarter. Everyone knows that. But, I mean, that's just so hard to come back from. And now, you know, you get a little worried that this 11 straight losses, you're facing the Heat, it might get into their heads a little bit, them being the Hornets. Although they have bounced back well this year. I mean, that's been one defining characteristic of this team. I mean, they got to bounce back now. They at least have to come out with a good effort. They can't have another game like this. If they do, you know, this could be a short series regardless of them coming back to Charlotte. But I don't expect that. But you just – this was nothing like what we've seen from either one of these teams in the entire regular season. I mean, Miami's playing a little bit faster as of late, but nothing like this. And the Hornets just, you know, couldn't get anything going from three. The ball movement was pretty much zero. And they just could not get anything going on offense, and what's worse, they couldn't get any stops. I mean, Al mentioned it after the game. They probably didn't have three defensive stops in a row. I don't know. I didn't fact check him on that one, but it sure felt like it. So you can't have a comeback when you can't get any stops.
Yeah, you mentioned this game didn't look anything like the regular season for either team, and that showed up especially on the boards. The Hornets finished the first half with 9 rebounds. Don't adjust your dials. That is correct. 9 rebounds for the first half. They finished with 28 total rebounds, 42 for the Miami Heat. And the Miami Heat had 14 offensive rebounds. And props to Spencer Percy, who came on the show on Thursday and pointed to that as a possible adjustment the Miami Heat could make, crashing the glass. They ranked 22nd in the league in offensive rebounding heading into the playoffs. They get 14, 19 second chance points. And, you know, you say 41 points in the first quarter. You don't just do that with bad defense. You also have to be bad on the boards. And the Hornets, just couldn't get two hands on the ball. Cody tipped one in at one point. I mean, it was just a disaster on the boards. And I want to go to the offensive end, too, because I think this will be something interesting to look at in the second game, because I think the Hornets, as you said, will bounce back, will have a better defensive game. It's hard to have a worse defensive game than giving up 123 points. But I want to look at the offensive end, where Miami had a great counter to the Hornets' dribble handoff. They were essentially blitzing it like you'd blitz a normal pick and roll, and they would, whoever was handing off, that defender would sag back, and then whether it was Goran Dragic or Justice Winslow, whoever was guarding the receiver, the running back in this football to basketball analogy, they would just run up and bump, basically go around the person who was handing it off and bump whoever was receiving the handoff. And so that, you know, you had Kemba or Nick Batum basically at the half court line by the time the handoff was over, and you've essentially ruined any advantage the Hornets have on the dribble handoff. So it was a great adjustment by Miami, and something that the Hornets will have to find a way to counter. And the offense played well. As Steve Clifford said after the game, the offense wasn't the problem, but that's because they were able to get to the free throw line. So it's 37 total free throw attempts. The Hornets get 29 points off of free throws, so they were able to make that adjustment. But I don't know if that's going to be there in game two. So they're going to have to figure out a way to better execute the dribble handoff for offense.
Yeah, they did a good job. You're right. Getting to the line, I mean, I guess you could say it kept them in it. It's hard to look at that final score and say they're in it at all. But, you know, there's just certain guys that have got to step up and have got to be ready to go. And I want to ask you about one guy in particular. I mean, how are you feeling about Kemba Walker this morning? His role on the team, we said he's a leader all year. He didn't look ready to me. I mean, I think he gave you 19 points, so he bounced back a little bit. And look, it's a tough cover going up against Dragic, I guess, but he's got to come out and command a little more respect and take the bull by the horns a little bit to me for this team to do what it wants to do.
Yeah, 19 points, but only one rebound and one assist, zero steals. So he wasn't involved fully. And, you know, neither was Nick Batum. 24 points, two rebounds, one assist. I mean, I think a lot of that, yeah, you have to put that on Kemba Walker and Nick Batum, but I think that Miami came out with a great game plan to stop what the Hornets wanted to do offensively with ball movement.
For sure.
But you're right. I think the one guy, though, that I would point to as not ready would be Marvin Williams.
He and Kemba sat for an extended period of time. It seemed like what in that second quarter. But yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. No one was ready to go, and they can't have that from Marvin, who was big from three, or Kemba, or you know, no one can show up like that in the playoff game and expect it to go well. Yeah, you're right.
And Lawal Ding took advantage of the Hornets in their last regular season matchup, 22 points in that game. And he did a lot of that work against Frank Kaminsky. In this game, Lawal Ding did a lot of his early work against Marvin Williams, who basically didn't recover fast enough to Lawal Ding in several situations, and Ding got a couple of early threes and got going. And, you know, once guys like that get into a rhythm, it's hard to stop them later on in the game. So this wasn't all on Frank Kaminsky. Marvin Williams not doing a good job defensively either, and I'm sure he knows it. 1 of 7 from the field, only 2 points. And he's the guy that the Hornets have looked to for a certain level of intensity and a certain, you know, that, right, that certain something. And he just wasn't able to deliver it. He basically went quiet at the worst possible time. And then Frank Kaminsky kind of looks swallowed by the moment. And I know what all the national guys and I'm sure local guys here too who wanted the Hornets to select Justice Winslow will immediately look to the Winslow versus Kaminsky matchup that Miami forced by going small, and Winslow certainly got the better of that matchup, I think.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, it's inevitable.
You're not into that whole story.
It doesn't seem appropriate right now. I mean, you put Winslow on the Hornets yesterday, and what difference does it make? Here's the thing.
I'm not into the narrative either, because I don't think that A plus B does not equal C. But I think the Hornets, when you look at like what adjustments should the Hornets make moving forward, they don't have a ton of options because the one thing they need is someone off the bench who can is athletic, can guard Lawal Ding, can recover, who has the quickness to recover to Lawal Ding, but also can guard him in a back down situation. Justice Winslow right. is well, that guy, and they don't have
yeah,
him.
Yeah, 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 totally. Well, they have MKG, of course, is not out there. And, right. I mean, that's why they didn't draft Justice Winslow. And it's, I mean, you know, on draft night when Winslow saw him there, I was all for it. But you're the Hornets. You really can't draft two MKGs or two or have two Winslows out there on the floor at the same time. So that's their thing. And I guess we don't need to go rehash the draft again. It has been a while though since we revisited draft night. 2016 or 2015, so it's always good to flashback, I guess. but I mean, look, Winslow is a ton more athletic. He's a beast. He's a man child right now. You know, but it's you know to do that and compare it to Frank and to nitpick anything from that game last night and say if you'd done this one thing differently, then the outcome would have been different is also crazy. I think. I mean, it was just a complete. You know, butt kicking, and sometimes that happens. We were going back and forth on it last night, Doug. They just got beat. They just got run out of the house.
Yeah, and Clifford said it after the game. He does. I don't anticipate Clifford making any adjustments, but he basically said that when they look at, you know, he hasn't looked at the tape yet at the time of that press conference. But to him, just That's on true. First glance, it looked like you know technique, one on one type of things that the Hornets have to just get better. There's not an adjustment really that needs to be made. The Hornets just need to get better. Do you agree with that? Do you think when you look at the roster, you look at how it's made up? I know there were several questions about whether Steve Clifford should make a change at the center position and start Al Jefferson yeah. for Cody Zeller. Yeah. What do you think?
Man, that was a popular question.
You knew it was going to be.
Yeah, it's almost like not many people have been paying attention to the Hornets as of late, but.
Calm down. Know,
I think that it's fine. It's whatever. I mean, you can't look at that game and not look for adjustments. I mean, it's a fair question to ask. I don't anticipate Clifford doing it on Wednesday night. But you know, if it goes again like that, you got to look at doing some sort of change. I think Al obviously gives him a better look. I think we've been on the more of the side of pro Al Jefferson since he's come back. So you know, it wouldn't be the worst thing. I mean, that's the adjustment that he's going to look and make. I mean, that's the one that pops to mind the most. I don't see it happening right now. Should he do it? I mean, it's so hard to judge off of that game. It was just such a disaster. And look, they beat the Heat twice. They beat them once without Al, right? So it can be done. You can't have another performance like that.
Okay, you want my answer? Yeah, I'm a little stronger on this. Should Steve Clifford make a change at center or anywhere? My answer is definitively no. No, 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 no. Listen, if you get your house broken into, David, you normally don't switch houses, okay? You regroup and you build better defenses. You call, you know, CPI or something, and they come over and they install, or you get a dog or something. You don't
there's
switch.
Dogs on that team.
Unfortunately. But, you know, I look at the roster. And I start to weigh different options. Well, do you try to fit Spencer Hawes in there? Because Zach Lowe said the Hornets can't play Al Jefferson and Frank Kaminsky together. But I don't know what other option they have. Because the problem is that the matchup with Miami is tough because their bench, so now we've whittled it down to 8 versus 8. And their bench is Justice Winslow, Josh Richardson, and Amari Stoudemire. And so Justice Winslow and Josh Richardson, both smaller guys, but they can guard multiple positions. And the Hornets are forced to go big because, look, you know, Troy Daniels is not going to be able to guard Dwayne Wade. And Jeremy Lamb is not going to be able to stay with Richardson or Winslow. You've got defensive issues with each guy that you try to plug into the lineup. And even on down the line to Hansborough, if you try to get Tyler in there, you're going to have so many issues spacing or being able to have any kind of competent offense when he's on the floor. There aren't a ton of answers for the team. And in terms of starting Al Jefferson with Cody Zeller, again, you won 48 games with this idea that Cody Zeller allows Marvin and Batum and Kemba Walker to hit three-pointers because the ball doesn't have to go immediately to Al Jefferson, that the ball doesn't slow down. And just because, again, just because your house got broken into doesn't mean that you switch houses. You just have to play better offensively and defensively. So that's my I'm passionate. Yeah.
Clifford went a little Roy Williams light on that question last night in the postgame. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, he did. Well, he started to say, look, you know, they play equal minutes. He almost like started to attack the question for sure.
And you know, they asked Big Al the same question. I think they asked everyone they talked to that question.
They asked the trainer the question for sure. Yeah.
I wonder if they asked Cody, but Al was like, it doesn't matter. I mean, honestly, it doesn't matter. So from that perspective, the guys already know. They'll look at the tape, but it's going to be a long couple of days for them to get back to the game Wednesday. And from a Hornets fan base, you're just frustrated because it's the first big spotlight the team has had, and you come out and lay a massive egg. So it's frustrating from a fan standpoint, and I can understand that.
Well, and the worst thing that happened to the Hornets was Boston coming back on Miami because it, A, set up this matchup, but B, you know, Miami learned a lot from that, I think, and they were not going to let the Hornets get back into this game. I mean, they really put the foot on the pedal and kept that lead going.
Same thing to them too last time they were there, so that was probably in the back of their mind as well.
All right, we'll have much more coverage of this game on Tuesday. HiveTalkLive.com, a full hour of analysis on this game. We'll dig a little deeper. 6 p.m. on HiveTalkLive.com. Also, big announcement. We made it on Twitter at the beginning of the game. We're giving away a signed mini ball signed by the entire team if we hit 2,000 followers by the NBA Finals. So go tell everyone you know to follow us on Twitter at HiveTalkLive because 1 out of 2,000, those aren't terrible odds. You could win this thing. So make sure to get on Twitter and let everyone know. Follow at HiveTalkLive. So we can get to 2,000. We're pretty close, so it's definitely doable. Help us get there, and we will give away this signed mini ball. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll be back tomorrow morning and tomorrow night. Much more coverage ahead. The playoffs, they're not even close to over, folks. This is one game. Game one.
It started.
It just got started. Until we speak again, all hail the teal and purple.